The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
It's a very good Monday morning to Professor Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Luke.
Good morning, Pat. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Now, the talking point about vaccines has been clotting and various countries deciding to do different things in terms of AstraZeneca. There's a lot of inconsistency in the attitude, which suggests to me that the science is not that clear yet.
Well, it's true, Pai. Some countries are suspending it entirely, as you've seen, especially in the under 55s. You know, Denmark and France and Germany have said, if you had one shot of AstraZeneca, get a different shot for the second vaccine, you know. So there's all these guidelines are changing, which is a bit disconcerting for people, especially as we know it's extremely rare, these events. But there is good news. On Friday, two big publications in the New England Journal, which is the world's number one medical journal, by the way, they know what's causing it, and they've confirmed it's this autoimmune reaction to platelets in your body. So there's a bit of progress there in terms of what's actually causing it. But you're right, though, it's very much being discussed. The thing is, Pat, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, there's four reports now of these very rare clotting events as well. So it's been looked at really, really closely, obviously. You know.
Now, one of the listeners has been on and asked this question. Given that COVID itself causes many unusual clotting disorders, could it be possible that those who've shown these rare clotting conditions had already been infected with COVID when they were vaccinated? Is it possible that when their immune response kicked in, it led to a supercharged event resulting in these unusual clots?
That's a possibility, Pat. Yeah, they've looked at that, though, and it doesn't seem to be the case, you know, that they were previously infected. They've looked at these patients extremely closely, as you can imagine, to see if they can find things in common between them, and they can't find anything that's common between them. So that's the first thing that's a bit unusual, I guess. They think it might be genetic. In other words, there's some predisposition extremely rare to it, you know, to see a pattern. But the consensus now is, for some reason, this AstraZeneca vaccine kicks off a big immune reaction. Of course it does. And then in a very small number of people, you get antibodies made to your own platelets, and it causes them to clump, you know, and that's what provokes the clotting reaction. That seems to be the case. It's called platelet factor 4, but they know exactly what's going on, which is great in a sense. It's called platelet factor 4, which is a well-known protein in platelets that makes them clump. And lo and behold, for some reason, your immune system decides to attack it, you know, in an autoimmune way. The other good news, Pat, is you can treat it. You can give people what's called IVIG, this special thing that can mop up all these antibodies and prevent it. And that's great, because obviously now they'll be watching out for it in the future. And there's a way to, if it starts to emerge, there's a way to treat it.
Yeah, so people obviously have to be aware of the potential symptoms that might indicate a clot was there. So maybe that's just part of the documentation that will have to accompany AstraZeneca when it's administered.
Exactly, and they've named it, but it's called vaccine-induced thrombocytopenia, or VIT, is the name they've given it now. It's like a new disease in a strange way, a new autoimmune disease. It's similar to a thing called heparin-induced thrombocytopenia, or HIT. They've seen something like it before, a very rare event, again, caused by a drug called heparin. So again, it's not quite as unusual as it was, if you know what I mean, the similarities between a previous situation, you know. So they're much more confident now as to what's going on there.
How quickly after the administration of the vaccine, in these very rare cases, and we'll talk about how rare they are in a moment, how soon before the symptoms manifest themselves?
Yeah, strangely, they think it starts, you know, when you're injected, a little bit of bleeding happens at the injection site, it's tiny, but that's where they give you a plaster to stick over it. It may be starting then, a little bit of bleeding begins, you begin to get these autoantibodies, and over several days then, they begin to build up, you know, because the symptoms aren't appearing for days after, really, you know. So in other words, it's triggered at the very start and then ramps up as sort of time goes by. And they reckon what happens is platelets are a very important part of your blood that help cause clots to form, you know. Looks like these platelets are now being triggered, and the platelets basically explode and then begin to clump together, causing these clots, you know. So they know exactly what's going on in terms of platelets, but it's probably triggered at the very start and then takes a bit of time to build up and begin to get worse as time goes by.
Now, it doesn't affect everybody because millions and millions of these vaccines have been administered. So is there any theory yet as to why a very, very small number of people will have this reaction when most people don't?
Yeah, the EMA are obviously all over this, as you can imagine, and they're now funding a massive research campaign. It's being run out of Rotterdam and Utrecht. Those two universities, Rotterdam and Utrecht, are leading it, you know, to address this very thing. They've got loads of DNA off these people, loads of blood samples, and they're trying to figure out exactly what it is. Their suspicion is it might be genetic. In other words, these people have some genetic thing in common, you know, and maybe slightly different genes. That's one idea. And the big question is, but what's in the vaccine that's causing it? Because you can figure that side of it, you might change the vaccine. They're trying lower doses now just to see if it's a dose-dependent thing. It could be some ingredient in the vaccine. But yet again, it's so important to emphasize, Pat, this is a lot rarer than, say, if you get in your car and go for a drive, you're at higher risk of crashing, you know, than you are of getting any reaction to this vaccine. So it's probably one in 150,000, 60,000 is the chances of this happening. So again, it wouldn't normally be something to worry about. It would just be on the label, you know, because obviously there's a massive focus on these vaccines, then we're all very concerned, aren't we? But overall, it's an extremely rare event.
One of the thoughts that occurred to me thinking about this was that we've had a massive campaign of vaccination globally. So therefore, you have a lot of vaccine administered in a relatively short time, and therefore this kind of thing will be more visible. If you had a normal vaccination campaign, one of these might pop up in Germany maybe, and then 6 months later another one in Germany, and they'd never make the association. But because the campaigns are so intense, they can make the association much more quickly.
Yeah, it wouldn't be reported publicly. You know, the EMA would be aware of it, say. The regulators would know about this. And it would be put on the label, you know, eventually on the instructions, say there's a rare side effect here. You know, but you're quite right, though. It wouldn't be all over the media. That's for definite. It's just because this massive intensity around vaccination. One thing as well, Pat, by the way, is I thought women were especially susceptible. That was one idea. You know, that's not the case now. It's men and women. The reason why women cropped up was there were more younger women being vaccinated because they were inclined to be healthcare workers. There were more female healthcare workers, and that's why they saw a few more women. You know, so they've ruled out gender as a factor, for example. But it's a massive effort, of course, as I say, to study this and find out more and more about it.
Okay, so we will know more about this probably fairly soon, but the main message is do not worry.
No,
and if the leaflets are updated and so on, and people get a list of the symptoms, which can include, blurred vision and abdominal pain and all sorts of things. I mean, there's a lot of symptoms that might get you to maybe pay attention. And the thing is, go to your GP and alert them to any unusual symptoms that you might have.
Exactly.
So moving on to what is potentially very, very good news, and that's the company we talked about it before, Valneva.
We have, they reported on Friday their first sort of scientific data in humans in their trial, you know, their vaccine, and they got a fantastic response, but unbelievable. I mean, this Valneva vaccine gets better and better. We knew from animal studies and from a small number of people it was going to be good, you know, but now this first phase 2A trial has revealed huge, it's called immunogenicity. You get a massive antibody response to this vaccine. And this is a French vaccine, as we discussed, but and it's the whole inactivated virus. So unlike just the spike protein, which is in the AstraZeneca one, for example, this is the whole SARS-CoV-2 virus inactivated. You know, in other words, it contains loads of pieces of the virus for the immune system to get its teeth into, you know. And then it's got two very powerful adjuvants, which are the additives that you give to vaccines to make them work stronger. One is called alum. It's called CPG to get technical, but it's a really powerful, powerful vaccine. And as I say, they were amazed at how strong it was. Now, the good news on this one, Pat, is it'll work against the variants very strongly because it's got so many different parts in it, you know, that if the current variants are dodging antibodies to the spike, this has got a lot more than a spike. There's loads of bits, basically, for the immune system to get at here. So, again, that was a really good one. And it's, as we were saying, it's European, which might be useful. They're making loads of it now. And you can imagine, Pat, they're getting ready now to make hundreds of millions of doses of this one because it's so effective. And then secondly, it will work against the variant. So, this, as you said before, this could be a big one in the coming months.
And we mentioned recently that Boris Johnson had made his trip to Scotland and everyone thought it was necessarily about Scottish independence and politics. But he went, where did he go? The Valneva factory.
That's right. Yes.
And lo and behold, he orders millions of doses of Valneva.
Yep. Someone
gave him the inside track there. Now, making a vaccine, it's not like baking a cake. You add in a bit of baking powder and a couple of eggs and some plain flour and, you've got a cake. it's a lot more complex. And Johnson & Johnson discovered that to their cost.
They did, and this is interesting. As you said before, Pat, there will be slip-ups in production. If anybody's in manufacturing, they'll always tell you, oh, look, things can break down, things can go wrong, and that's why we're seeing delays. There's nothing to be alarmed about because it happens, you know. But one rather silly one was, there's a factory in America in Baltimore. They're making the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and they're also making AstraZeneca. So they've been contracted to make both vaccines. And guess what, Pat? They mixed them up into the one tube. Isn't that ridiculous? So someone made a big boo-boo and mixed the two vaccines into the one tube, and a whole batch had to be ditched. We're talking 60 million doses of the vaccine had to be flushed down the toilet, sadly, because someone had made an error in the production process. And again, it illustrates what can go wrong in these vaccine manufacturing places. I get that person might have been fired, you imagine, because they got the two vaccines mixed up. But again, they're back into production again. But it illustrates how these little glitches will happen, and illustrates why we need more than one vaccine, because obviously one factory might make a mistake, you see. You need another one there just to make up the supply, I suppose. But it's a good example. A human error did that, you know. So the human error can creep into these things.
Yeah, and then they separated out the manufacturing. AstraZeneca has to go somewhere else to make its stuff. They don't want to risk this thing happening again. J&J are going to control all the production in that factory, even though it's not their own factory. They're going to move in and control everything. Did you see the story, Luke, about centres administering J&J in the United States, in Georgia, I think it was, four people have fainted and they closed the centre and stopped vaccinating. But it seems that the consensus was it was the heat.
Well, that's right, precisely. See, but there's an intensity on this, isn't there? We've never seen the like of a vaccination process ever in human history, have we? Where there's hundreds of millions of people. The US hit 4.5 million vaccinations in a single day last week. But you can imagine the spotlight is on, Northern Ireland, the spotlight's on every single vaccination that has been looked at, isn't it? And people are getting a bit anxious, I suppose. But you're right. People will faint anyway sometimes, you know, in different situations. And you're right, that was just a hot room made those people faint. But again, it gave rise to anxiety, you see. So it is a delicate process, I suppose, because so many are being vaccinated every day, everywhere. We're seeing these kinds of things, I guess, as we go along.
You wanted to mention also a therapy that is proving successful when used with other drugs in hospital to prevent fatalities.
I did, because this is a drug that we'd watched for a while. It's called baricitinib. Another horrible mouthful, but this is a well-known sort of anti-inflammatory drug. It targets a thing called JAK, J-A-K, which is a part of the immune system, and JAK can go out of control and cause symptoms, you know, and this company, baricitinib, is the inhibitor of JAK, and they did a big trial, and it was in combination with remdesivir, the antiviral, and dexamethasone, the steroid, and they got a remarkable decrease in death rate. 38% less deaths were happening if the people had that combination of all three drugs, you know. And we knew combination therapies were bound to work really well, you see. But this is really good evidence. If you do a combination of different drugs together, you see a big increase in efficacy. Now, it's important, because that could become what's called standard of care now. So anybody in hospital who is beginning to develop severe symptoms, I'll bet in America for the start they'll be given baricitinib now. And it'll have this profound effect on saving lives. And as we've always said, that was always plan B anyway. That if the vaccines took longer to be discovered or whatever it might be, there should be therapies in hospitals to help people. And these trials keep yielding interesting results, you know. So I suspect baricitinib will be the next big thing. Watch. And it works especially well, Pat, in people on non-invasive ventilator. In other words, the CPAP system. It worked really well on those people, you know. So again, now they're getting sort of subtleties in how they're treating people and getting better all the time at treating people in hospital, which is great, because obviously then the death rate goes down for that reason as well.
This one, interesting, from News Talk, listeners have been texting in spades here. Both my sister and niece got a nosebleed after AstraZeneca first dose of vaccine, which is concerning when neither ever have had nosebleeds normally. What does Luke think? Because I'm quite worried. That's the opposite of clotting.
It is. I wouldn't worry. Nosebleeds happen. You know, I mean, a certain number of people, things happen to them anyway, and even though there mightn't be a history of nosebleeds, again, that could have been a bit of tension. You never know what would cause that, you know, but I wouldn't worry about that. And again, I suspect that person was well looked after just to make sure there wasn't anything untoward there, you know, but I wouldn't worry about that.
Reassuring one here from Morris. My wife got her AstraZeneca vaccine yesterday. She's in her mid-40s. She has diabetes. She has a redness around the injection, slight headache and a bit of a temperature. Other than that, she's in great form. People should not be afraid. Kathleen says, can you ask Luke if my daughter has had her first vaccine in Canada and returned home to Ireland before the second vaccine is administered, could she have a different brand of vaccine for her second shot?
She could, yes, she could. There's no problem, Pat, with mixing and matching, actually, because and we know from the immune system that can work even better, you know, if you have a second type the second time round. Because sometimes the first one, you get a good response, and then the second time, a slightly less response, strangely, because you get kind of desensitized to it, you see. So, and as we said before, there's trials running now with mixing and matching different vaccines. So if you're offered a second type of vaccine second time around, that's fine.
This one here, my 78-year-old mother has had her two jabs, the Moderna. She's had a severe exacerbation of back pain, general aches, mainly after the first dose. Just wondering if this could be the vaccine. She is improving slowly, from Paula.
It might be, and as we've said, if you get some symptoms, that can be a good thing. You know, obviously, if the symptoms are severe and you feel very unwell, you should definitely ring up your GP or whatever it is, you know. But in general terms, any kind of mild symptoms after the vaccine is nothing to worry about. And as we've said, Pat, it's evidence your immune system is kicking off, which is what you want. Because remember, the immune system is a very powerful thing to have. It's your greatest ally against this virus. And if it's working really well, and if you feel a little bit fluey and you have aches and pains here and there, that's a typical so there are typical symptoms of the immune system working, you know. But again, any concerns, just talk to the GP.
Please ask Luke, does he know how quick we are to implement the new therapy he's been talking about? I hope we're not as slow as we were with masks.
Well,
so how quickly do them? Yeah, how quickly do the medics actually at the on the shop floor, yeah, in the wards, how quickly do they look at these studies and say, yeah, let's do that?
It can be very fast, but dexamethasone was the first one that we saw working. Remember about 6-7 months ago now, I think it was, dexamethasone, the trial in the UK was done, fantastically well-controlled, double-blind placebo trial. Within a few weeks, that was now standard of care in hospitals everywhere, you know. Now, baricitinib is a more experimental drug. It is approved for arthritis, baricitinib, interestingly, so it's already in, yeah, people, you know. Now, what will happen now is the EMA, will look, our friends in the EMA, of course, they will look at it now closely and then approve it in Europe, you would predict, and then it'll be available in hospitals. And that's a question of each healthcare system agreeing to take it on, like any medicine, you know. But it could come very quickly. I mean, the results from that trial was so striking, you know, that it'd be unethical not to deploy that quickly. Because if someone's in hospital doing very badly and there's evidence of a drug working, well, of course the doctors want to get that drug into that patient as quickly as possible, you know. So I would predict that'll be available pretty soon. Again, because it's in humans already anyway. Arthritis speeds up the whole process.
Now, our News Talk listeners are very curious about things. Could you please ask Luke if by vaccinating all the older and middle-aged people, will we push the virus into children in a more severe way because the virus will always look for a host?
No, not really. I mean, the children do very well on this infection, remember. I mean, there's hardly any problems if you're under 30, as we know. Extremely low risk of any severe disease of any kind. So even if the virus it would infect those younger people, there's nothing really to worry about there. And in fact, there's discussions now, Pat, not to vaccinate younger people as much because they don't do very badly, especially with AstraZeneca, for instance, even though there's a tiny risk. But they say there's no need to vaccinate them with that vaccine because they're at such low risk of disease, you see. So no, we don't really worry about that. I mean, the big debate's going to be now, should we give our vaccines away to the developing world to vaccinate their vulnerable people before we vaccinate our younger people, you know? Because obviously the vulnerable are still there everywhere, older people and so on, you know? So that debate might shift slightly away from vaccinating young people. But no, there'll be no worries of the virus suddenly dominating now in younger people. There's no concern there.
What about the numbers of people who've actually died as a result of vaccines? One of my listeners suggests that it's in the thousands, but I've been looking for the figures and I can't find them anywhere that suggest such a high mortality rate.
No, it's very low. I mean, they look at that very closely, remember. I mean, the good news here that people should realise is those clots that came up, very rare, like one in 150,000, yet they were spotted and reported, you know. So this process called pharmacovigilance, which is where you watch people at post-vaccination, anything untoward gets reported very quickly. That system's working great. So if there were an increase in even a small number of deaths, that always gets reported. And now the regulators look at it just to make sure, you see. So there's no need to worry about increased death rate among vaccinated people at all, because it's tiny, tiny, tiny numbers.
And my 19-year-old son has an autoimmune condition already, psoriatic arthritis. He's had the first AstraZeneca vaccine. Should he avoid getting the second one?
No, again, there's no concerns. I mean, this is a very rare. There's loads of types of autoimmune diseases, remember. There's hundreds of them, in fact, you know, and they're all quite different. They overlap because they involve the immune system. But what's driving it can be very, very separate. And this is a very specific autoimmune situation, you see, against this thing called platelet factor 4. With psoriatic arthritis, we know what the autoantibodies are there, actually, you know, and what's been recognized aberrantly by the immune system is very different. So again, there's no reason to assume that that person would be at risk of this at all. So I wouldn't worry about that.
Another one, can you take aspirin or anything to avoid clotting post-vaccine?
Well, again, yeah, it's a safe enough thing to do. Take load. You can't buy baby aspirin anymore, though, it turns out, because remember, there was a risk from aspirin. So not necessarily would be my answer to that, I think. But again, if you feel anxious, you might, you know. But again, the odds of something happening are so remote that there's no reason to do that.
All right, well, Luke, thank you very much for all of that. You know, mostly, I have to say, it's good news, particularly Valneva coming up. That may become the vaccine of choice in future years when we're getting an annual COVID-19 or coronavirus vaccine. It may be the one, still in its testing phase, and not to worry about any of the others. The difficulty rate is so low, you're more likely to be knocked down walking to the shops. So there we go. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, thank you very much for joining us.